Today's Veterans Radio program is dedicated to the memory of Captain John Patrick Brennan, Captain Charles David Yeagler, Spec 4 Richard Allen Smith, Jr., and Spec 4 Tony Vasquez. These men were killed on 9 October 1969 while flying on a mission for MACV SOG in Cambodia. They were shot down by a SAM missile.
From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host, Dale Fromberry.
And good morning, America. And as they say, better late than never. The gremlins were around this morning, but maybe it was a special op mission. I'm not sure what was going on. But we are back on the air live here coming from you from the studios of WDEO in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And our program today is dedicated to the men who served with the MACV SOG Command and Control South. It's a great story to talk about, and I'm very excited to have on our program is a Lieutenant Colonel Fred Lindsay, who has written a definitive version of what happened there in Vietnam. And I want to read you a little statement that came from modernforces.com, and it states that the Military Assistant Command Vietnam Studies and Observation Group, that's the SOG part, was a highly classified multi-service United States Special Operations Forces unit which conducted covert and unconventional warfare operations prior to and during the Second Indonesia War, better known as the Vietnam War. Established in January of 1964, the unit conducted strategic reconnaissance missions in the Republic of Vietnam, the Democratic Republic of Vietnam, North Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia. Their mission carried out the capture of enemy prisoners, rescued downed pilots, and conducted rescue operations to retrieve Allied prisoners of war throughout Southeast Asia, and conducted clandestine agent team activities and psychological operations against that country. This is a very important story for me here on Veterans Radio. I was fortunate enough to fly with a unit that participated in many of these missions. I did not get to fly a whole lot of them, but it was an honor when I did go up there. The reason I brought up the dedication for the program to Captains Brennan, Yeagler, Specs, Smith, and Vasquez is that I was in the air that day and observed their being shot down by that mission. And for all of those people that are listening from the 195th Assault Helicopter Company and the Sky Chiefs, my heart goes out to you. My thoughts are always with you. And it was an honor to participate with the Sky Chiefs during my tour in Vietnam. We're going to be coming back in just a moment and talking with Lieutenant Colonel Fred Lindsay, who, as I mentioned before, has written his book is entitled The Secret Green Beret Commandos in Cambodia, or better known as one of the working titles, I think, was Special Operations Recon Mission Impossible. So we'll be back in just a moment. You are listening to Veterans Radio.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
Fighting soldiers from the sky, fearless men who jump and die, men who mean just what they say, the brave men of the Green Beret, silver wings upon their chest. These are men, America's best. 100 men.
And we're back on Veterans Radio, and we're going to be talking in just a second with Lieutenant Colonel Fred Lindsay. And I want to give you a little background on Colonel Lindsay. He enlisted in the Army in 1948, obtaining the rank of corporal. He was then accepted to and graduated from the United States Military Academy at West Point in 1954 as a second lieutenant. After infantry school, he qualified as a master parachutist, and my partner Bob will like that, and as a ranger. He served in various leadership and staff positions in the 11th Airborne Division, the 82nd Airborne Division, and 101st Airborne Division. His first Vietnam combat tour, he was a MACV C-3 Air Liaison Officer with the 35th Tactical Fighter Wing. I know not everybody understands all these, but just bear with me here. And flew over 50 missions in the back seat of these aircraft. Again, quite the adventure, primarily in F-100s. Then went to the 1st Brigade of the 101st Airborne Division as an Assistant Operations Officer. Completed that tour. Second tour, he was commander of the 2nd of the 8th Cav Battalion of the 1st Cav Division. Next, he was Deputy Commander of OP-35 of MACSOG. That's Military Assistance Command Vietnam Studies and Observation Group. And then was commander of the Command and Control Detachment South from January to July 1970. There is a lot of things here that Colonel Lindsay has done. I think that kind of gives you his background there. For those of you that flew some of these missions or participated in some of these MACV SOG missions, give us a call here on Veterans Radio today at 877-573-7825. 877-573-7825. This is your opportunity to tell your story. They finally declassified some of this information. We're actually allowed to talk about it. So joining me on Veterans Radio today is Lieutenant Colonel Fred Lindsay. And Colonel Lindsay, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Good morning, Dale.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
That's good. I'm really excited to talk to you today about this book, which your true title is The Secret Green Beret Commandos in Cambodia, A Memorial History of MACV SOG's Command and Control Detachment South and Its Air Partners, Republic of Vietnam, 1967-72. Whew. I think I like the other one about the secret missions.
The one thing that we've always left out is our air partners. And we would have never had any success without them. So I don't, when I talk about CCS or SOG, I always talk about our air partners because they lived with us and fought with us and died with us.
Well, tell me about this organization and how it got started. I wasn't that aware of it, of the history of MACV SOG.
Well, you remember way back when the French were fighting the South Vietnamese, and they lost, or the North Vietnamese, and they lost that battle, and they had the Geneva Accords in, 56? And immediately after that, the North Vietnamese immediately started building what's called the Ho Chi Minh Trail that went down through Cambodia. Into various parts of South Vietnam. And we started putting troops in there as advisors, and then we put 3,500 Marines in Da Nang, but that wasn't until 1965. So it was in 64 that they created SOG to handle all of the intelligence gathering in the theater to help the MACV, that's the Military Assistance Command, Vietnam. And so they handled everything in Thailand, Laos, North Vietnam, and Cambodia. They had air operations as well as maritime operations. But it got off to a real slow, sputtering start. They took over from the CIA when Defense Secretary McNamara wasn't pleased with the results CIA was getting. He came up with a quick plan and was going to have immediate success by creating this organization, and they had nobody to run it. So They started off by grabbing a few special forces guys here and there and slowly cobbled it together. And that's the way it began.
Well, it certainly was important for our audience to know. We have a good size audience that are civilians also, to understand that the North Vietnamese had this resupply trail that ran from North Vietnam down through Laos, down through Cambodia, and entered into Vietnam at various places along the trail. And this is the way that they kept resupplying their troops. And for some unknown reason, and maybe you can enlighten us on this, we were not allowed to. Theoretically, we were not allowed to go into Laos and Cambodia and take out this trail.
Well, the Geneva Convention set up Laos and Cambodia as neutral countries, and everybody was supposed to stay out of there. But when our people left Laos, I think there were something like 40 or 50 of our people counted. There were still hundreds of the North Vietnamese in Laos, and they stayed there and literally owned the eastern part of it.
And pretty much the same thing in Cambodia also.
Well, the same thing in Cambodia, yes. The president of Cambodia was a fellow by the name of Prince Sihanouk,
mm-hmm.
and he was not a very good fellow. So he made deals with the North Vietnamese to let them come down through the trail, and he had his own military sort of pull back about 15 kilometers from the border so that they didn't interfere with one another. And so they had pretty much free rein going back and forth behind that border.
All right, so we're looking at the establishment of the SOG units in South Vietnam around 1964, 65, but they really didn't get operational until around 1967. Is that correct?
Well, it was 1966. The 5th Special Forces Group, which was not a part of SOG, 5th Special Forces Group just handled all of the in-country stuff, advising North Vietnamese units as well as commanding what's called Mike forces, which were volunteers, kind of like the National Guard for Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, the 5th Special Forces formed a Project Delta, and that became sort of the model for how we needed to make inserts into enemy territory and gather intelligence. And then they formed two other groups called Project Sigma and Project Omega. And those two were given assignments, given operational control to SOG in about 66. Or 67, 68, and they became the genesis of what would become Command and Control South, which I later commanded.
All right, and so these units were made up of special forces, American Special Forces members?
Yes, they were made up, they were led by Special Forces,
mm-hmm.
In small recon teams of maybe two or three special forces men. And then we had the mercenaries, if you will, the Montagnards, the Nungs, the Cambodians, that didn't want to serve in the South Vietnamese Army because they were really looked down on as second-class citizens.
Mm-hmm.
But they had a lot of experience. Many of them that were in our unit had fought in the Battle of Dinh Binh Phu with the French. So they were very good fighters. They were very loyal to us. And so we would have a team of maybe three special forces and four to eight of the what we call special special commandos.
Right. And then what would happen is that we're talking with Lieutenant Colonel Fred Lindsay, who's written a book about the history of Command and Control South and the story of MACV SOG's missions in the southern part or middle part, I guess you could say, of Vietnam in 3 Corps. And if you've got a comment or something that you'd like to add to the conversation, please give us a call here on Veterans Radio at 877-573-7825. That's 877-573-7825. Well, tell us about the difficulty that you had in putting this book together.
Well, it's written some 43 years after the fact, after the war was over. And the reason for that was, one, I was always waiting for somebody else more qualified to write this thing. And that didn't happen. It is written as a memorial to our men because we lost at CCS, which is one of the 3 ground units that had operational control by SOG. We had a northern, a central, and a southern, and the southern part was in an area called Bamituit in the highlands. And we lost about 100 men, and that's both CCS and our air partners. Over a period of time, we had 14 different aviation units, Army and Air Force, that supported us. And the way they supported us is that we made insertions behind the lines, behind the border in Cambodia, by helicopter primarily. Occasionally we would walk in through the border, but the easiest way, because we had 300 miles of border, was to go in by a helicopter, and they would either land by... be inserted by landing the choppers, or at times they would rappel in, mm-hmm. or go in by ladder if the bamboo or the trees were too tall. So that's the way we got in and got out.
Well, there were a lot of secrets going on at the time. If I recall correctly, we were not allowed to have any identification on us or initially on the aircraft. The teams that went in didn't, you know, none of them wore dog tags, none of them wore any sort of identification. All we carried was this, it seems to me, a plastic or probably it was silk, some sort of American flag on one side, and on the other side was that if you got us out of Cambodia or back to American troops, you would receive some sort of reward.
Yes. Well, this was a very top secret outfit. It was what's called dark operation. We were sworn to secrecy. Everybody had to sign that they would not write or tell anything about this for at least 20 years under the threat of going to prison. And yes, our men, when they went in, and that includes the aviators, they went in what we call a sterile uniform. They had no rank, no insignia on. They were told that if they got into trouble, the government would deny any knowledge of them being where they were found. Our people were told if they got captured to say that they wandered across the border, really weren't supposed to be there, but yes, it was very top secret, and it was kept top secret for so long after the war, it was more than 20 years before they finally declassified us, and so we, in that interim period, a lot of our memories got very vague. And a lot of our men died, not only in Vietnam, but since that time back in the States. So that's what made it so very difficult to write this book, because the Department of Army destroyed our after action reports even before they declassified us. So
I thought that was really very interesting when I read that in your notes, that they had destroyed all of the after action reports. And I can remember, although I didn't, as I mentioned earlier, I didn't fly these missions very often, but I did have the privilege of doing it a couple of times, and that we were really not afraid, but we were so concerned, I guess, because we did sign that form, and I probably most of the pilots that I know, you know, we did not discuss this even amongst ourselves very often. I don't know if we were paranoid or what it was, but it is something that we took very seriously. And I know I didn't talk about it probably for 20, 25 years myself.
Right.
Until the birth of the computer and the Internet, I think, is when people started talking to each other about it a little more.
Well, and we had a fellow by the name of John Plaster. He was a major by that time, and he had run missions for about 3 years in Vietnam, and he decided to write a book about it, and he did. And published it in 1997. And then he had to go to the Department of State and the Department of Army, and they finally relented and brought about the declassification of SOG's existence and documents. And that was over 25 years after SOG had been disbanded. So we owe John Plaster a real salute with the Green Beret, because he opened things up where we could talk about it.
Well,
but since then, there have been a number of individual books about their individual stories, but nobody ever wrote a history of my unit, which was Command and Control South.
I have a question about the teams, and I want to go back to that. We've got about 2 minutes until we're going to take a break at the bottom of the hour. But was it just Army troops that were part of these special teams on the ground, or were there?
It was just Army troops, Army Special Forces troops, who were the U.S. component, and then the others were the indigenous mercenaries, as I call them. Who were a part of the teams, and they were very well-trained, very heroic individuals who would undertake what I call the most dangerous missions in Vietnam, because when they went across the border, they had no artillery, and in Cambodia we had no tactical air support. All we had was the helicopter gunship support from units like your 195th Assault Helicopter Company. We also had a Air Force unit, the only one of its kind, helicopters, called the Green Hornets, the 20th SOS, Special Operations Squadron. And they brought us in, took us in what we call SLICS, which is just a transportation Huey.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the gunships that could put up a wall of fire around us and help us escape some pretty hairy stories.
Well, I'm hoping that we'll get some of those hairy stories, as you say. We do have a caller on the line. I'm going to ask Frederick to hold on until we come back from our break before I put him on. I ran into a gentleman the other day here locally that was a door gunner on an Air Force helicopter in Two Corps. And I was not even aware that the Air Force did those things.
Yeah.
I was just fascinated. And the timing, of course, was perfect when I received your information about your book. So I'm trying to get that guy to come on and talk about his adventures.
Well, he would be one of the Green Hornets.
Okay.
20th SOS supported CCC, the Central Command, as well as my Southern Command.
Okay. Well, we're going to be coming back in just a moment. If you want to get in on the conversation, give us a call, 877-573-7825. This is Veterans Radio.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Army Captain Ed Freeman flew 14 rescue missions under intense enemy fire, saving 30 seriously wounded soldiers. Details after this.
If you're a recent Air Force veteran, you probably spend some time comparing your new civilian life with what you had on the Air Force. Maybe the grass isn't as green as you thought it would be. Well, you might have a chance to come back. We're looking for people in certain career fields to return to active duty. Maybe your job's on the list. For more information, call 1-800-423-USAF or log on at airforce.com. Cross into the blue with the U.S. Air Force. No one comes close.
As a flight leader, Freeman supported a heavily engaged American infantry battalion in the I Trang Valley in the Republic of Vietnam. The unit was almost out of ammunition after taking some of the heaviest casualties of the war, fighting off a relentless attack from a highly motivated, heavily armed enemy force. When the infantry commander closed the helicopter landing zone due to intense direct enemy fire, Freeman risked his own life by flying his unarmed helicopter through a gauntlet of enemy fire time after time, delivering critically needed ammunition, water, and medical supplies to the besieged battalion. His flights had a direct impact on the battle's outcome by providing the engaged units with timely supplies of ammunition critical to their survival. After medical evacuation helicopters refused to fly into the area due to intense enemy fire, Captain Freeman flew 14 separate rescue missions, providing life-saving evacuation of an estimated 30 seriously wounded soldiers, some of whom would not have survived had he not acted.
Check it out, it's the Terminator. Hey, when'd you get back, huh?
Did you have to shoot anyone?
Why are you so distant? Are you not happy to see me?
So what's the deal? You gonna get a job now or what?
Why are you being so jumpy? Put all that stuff behind you, okay?
No one knows what it's like to come back from Iraq or Afghanistan unless they were there. Join other veterans at communityofveterans.org because we know where you're coming from. Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
He blesses the boys as they stand in line. The smell of gun grease and their bayonets, they shine. He's there to help them all that he can. To make them feel wanted, he's a good holy man.
And we're back on Veterans Radio, and that was for the 1st Platoon of the 195th Assault Helicopter Company, better known as Sky Pilots. We're talking with Lieutenant Colonel Fred Lindsay about his new book about the secret Green Beret Commandos in Cambodia. And we've got a caller on the line, Colonel, and I'm bringing up Frederick from Davidson, Michigan. Good morning.
Good morning.
What's your question or comment, sir?
Okay. Three of my favorite heroes, Bull Greitz, Lieutenant Colonel, highly decorated Green Beret, Vietnam, Lieutenant Colonel Dan Marvin, Expendable Elite, another hero from the Vietnam conflict, and Terry Reed, who was a pilot, who authored the book Compromise, Clinton, Bush, and the CIA. I'm going to read quickly from Bull Greitz's book, Call to Serve, Profiles in Conspiracy, from John F. Kennedy to George Bush. This is the definitive account of a nation betrayed,
a
spider web of patriots for profit.
Hold on.
Hold on.
What does this have to do with Mac V. Song?
I want to ask the guest why it is the American people have been summarily and systematically lied to. Even McNamara, Robert McNamara, admitted the Gulf of Tonkin was a non-event. And at the same time, McNamara and LBJ authorized the attack on the USS Liberty.
Okay, let's back up here.
So I want the guest. Does he know about Bull Greitz, Lieutenant Colonel Bull Greitz, Dan Marvin, who authored Dan Marvin, by the way, his book, Expendable Elite, the CIA took him to court in South Carolina about years ago attempting to have his book purged from the marketplace or not even published. Fortunately, Colonel Dan Marvin prevailed against the infamous CIA, which, by the way, John F. Kennedy had promised us he would disband the CIA into 1,000 pieces and scatter it to the four winds.
Okay, let's let the colonel answer your question, Frederick, and so we can get back to exactly what we're talking about today. Colonel Lindsay, are you aware of any of these things?
I am aware of some of them. There are a number of excellent books about what brought on the war and exactly how it was conducted. It was very sloppily conducted by the Pentagon as well as the State Department. I don't know all the specifics of what this gentleman is talking about. The book that I like best is not one of the ones that he mentioned. But it goes. There are a lot of books out there that you can read that tell the story about how the war started. But
yeah,
my time.
There are a couple of things that I did want to get into that you did mention, Fred. I want to thank you so much for your call, and I'm going to go back to our interview right now, and that is that you mentioned that the lack of support from the Johnson administration caused some difficulties for our missions that the MACV was and SOG were conducting. Is that true?
That's absolutely true. The special forces were looked down on at that time by our conventional army brass, who knew all about big conventional battles from World War II, but they didn't have any experience in unconventional warfare, and so they kind of looked down on the special forces a lot. The Geneva Convention that set up the North and South Vietnam situation was one in which Cambodia and Laos, as I said, were supposed to be neutral, and of course North Vietnam did not honor that at all. We had a ambassador, Sullivan, I think his name was, in Laos, and he was given the State Department authority over what we could do in those two countries, and he made very strict restrictions on where we could go, how many aircraft could fly, how many people could be there, how many teams could be on the ground. It was just like trying to fight a war with one hand behind your back.
Well, I can certainly remember some of the options, you know, with these fire zones where you had to get permission to fire. Somebody shot at you from a rubber plantation. You weren't allowed to fire back until you got permission. I know that in some of the other missions that we were on that we weren't supposed to, you know, start shooting when we were even getting shot at. So it's very frustrating. We can see that continuing on today, that the conflict between the military and the politicians of the world, and how do how do they mesh effectively so that we're not putting our men and women in danger. Would you agree with that?
Yes, that's very true. When we first went into Iraq, for instance, that was pretty much all military run, and now in Afghanistan and elsewhere, why we have the State Department more and more calling the shots and putting our guys in harm's way because of it.
Well, I get back to our story. About some of these missions, are there any specific ones that you recall that you could share with our audience about what some of these men did?
Well, there are several outstanding missions that stand out in my mind. In CCS, we had a fellow there by the name of Shriver. and he was called Mad Dog Shriver by the North Vietnamese because he was so famous at getting into their areas and finding intelligence. And let me say clearly that our mission was to gather intelligence for MACV. MACV had no, General Westmoreland had no interest in what went on in Cambodia or Laos. That was outside his area of operation. So even the people in MACV didn't pay much attention to what we had in SOG.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a lot of, we would even be called down to Saigon to show off a 122-millimeter rocket that we had picked up. And all of our people that went in as teams carried cameras because we shot lots of pictures of what we saw, roads and pipelines and armored vehicles and so forth. But back to Jerry Shriver, he was in on a mission in the area called the Fishhook, which is just north of Saigon. It's a salient that sort of the Cambodian border dips down and back.
Mm-hmm.
And that was where the Cosvin, the North Vietnamese headquarters for all of their troops in Cambodia were. And so Jerry went in on an operation that was not very well run and lost his life along with all of his team. We've had a number of those. As I mentioned before, my unit had 56 people killed over a six-year period. My air partner units made up the rest of what was a total of 100.
Well, I know, as I mentioned at the beginning of our program, that our command and control aircraft was shot down by a SAM missile on the 9th of October in 1969, and we lost the people on board that day. And I know that there were other incidents where our company lost people. And it's just, I'd like to describe a little bit, just briefly, what the missions were from our side. And that is that we would take off from a place in up near a place called Budap and across the border into Cambodia, a very low level, with a team on board. The command and control aircraft would be above us, and they would vector the aircraft into the landing zone or into the area where they wanted to drop the troops off.
Mm-hmm.
And we would drop them off, DD, as they would say, get out of there as fast as we could. We were protected by our gunships. In our case, they were the Thunder Chickens. And then we would go back to Budap and wait for what would happen. And it would seem that always inevitably, they would always run into contact at night. And then we would have to go out and get them, either by a landing zone, pulling them up in ladders or Maguire rigs, all types of different types of equipment that we needed to get them out safely. And I have to admire what they did on the ground, and also I have to admire what the pilots and crews did for all of these aviation units. They were amazing jobs.
Oh, they were incredible. They were absolutely incredible. Another event that I can recall clearly, it led to a Medal of Honor for one of the pilots. It was the Air Force 20th SOS. They went in, and inserted a team, and the team ran into a lot of trouble. And it was an all-day battle trying to get them out, and we lost several helicopters. During the process, helicopters would run out of fuel and have to go back and then come back again. And it was down to one transport slick and one gunship, and the facts standing up on top there.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, okay, we're going to make one last try to pull these people out. And so Lieutenant Jim Fleming went along a riverbank behind the place the battle was taking up, and he just landed with his front skids on the riverbank and sat there waiting for the team to run to climb into the chopper. And, you know, the front plastic bubble of his aircraft was just about shot off, and he just sat there as calmly as he could. Of course, his gunners were supporting the team as they were trying to escape their being surrounded. And anyway, he pulled them out at the very last minute and got them home. He's one of our two Medal of Honor winners for the CCS unit.
It's an amazing story, and it's amazing what these men did during that time. It's hard to believe that they're all in their 60s now.
Some of us are in their 80s.
Yeah. I know. We're talking with Lieutenant Colonel Fred Lindsay, who's authored a new book about the Command and Control Detachment South of MACV SOG. It's something I think you guys, listeners, will find very interesting out there. We need to take a break, Colonel. We'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
Many of us went places we'd never been before. You're listening to Veterans Radio, and we're talking with Lieutenant Colonel Fred. Excuse me. Excuse me, Fred Lindsay here on Veterans Radio. Need to get my cough button going here. Anyway, about his book about the Green Beret Commandos in Cambodia and Command and Control South, Colonel Lindsay, we were talking earlier about some of these missions that they had to fly out there, and I know that one of the missions that our company flew, I wasn't involved in this, but they uncovered, they found a headquarters of North Vietnamese Army. It seemed like people were sitting in a mess hall almost as they were flying by. They went, uh-oh, look, there they are over there. And it turned into one of those things where we lost a number of aircraft. I know that a couple of Distinguished Flying Crosses were issued on that day. But, you know, these missions were frightening, I think.
Well, they were extremely hazardous. Our guys were volunteers. They were volunteer from the point of going to airborne training, and then they volunteered for the Special Forces. Then they volunteered to go to Vietnam, and then they volunteered to go into SOG. A lot of people chose not to do that. But we had folks in there that had a lot of experience initially, but later on in late 69 and 70, we were getting people right out of the Special Forces schools that joined us, and these young men just stepped up, and with some mentoring from their more experienced guys, did a absolutely remarkable job. They would go in supposedly for 10 days, but we were lucky if we could stay in by the time in the 70s when I was there. If we could keep them in for two or three days, that was a real success story. But we were trying to gather intelligence, and the main thing for intelligence, that the best part of what we did was the intelligence of telling our American units along that border when they were going to be hit and who was going to hit them and from what direction and so forth. So we saved hundreds of lives of American troops that were back behind the border.
Well, I know that they certainly did do that, warn us of attacks, because there was, I remember one particular day they told us that at Quan Loi we were going to get hit that afternoon, and sure enough, it happened. And everybody was ready and so forth. I'm trying to get a grasp on why they discontinued these missions. In your biography, you mentioned that you were the last commander of these units, and that ended in 1970?
No, I'm the last surviving commander.
Oh, okay.
So we had others right up to 72.
Mm-hmm.
It turned out to be a West Point classmate and a very good friend of mine. Andy Underwood had the unit when it was no longer called SOG and no longer called CCS, but we were still doing the same thing under different names. As the war wound down and conventional units were all being brought back to the United States, we still had some folks in there, and Andy was one of them. His airplane got shot down and everybody was killed.
I try to explain to our audience what happened there as we were winding down our operations in Vietnam. I know that the 195th was disbanded the following year after I left, and as you mentioned, all the ground troops came home, but there were an awful lot of pilots and special forces teams that stayed there almost till the very end.
Yes, that's true. You recall when President Nixon came into office
with his secret plan.
With his secret plan that was announced to the world, we were going to have an incursion into Cambodia after we had proven beyond a shadow of a doubt to anybody at all that the NVA were in there in division size strengths, and they were finally given the green light in May and June to go in for 60 days.
Mm-hmm.
All of our conventional forces attacked, and the NVA knew we were coming, and most of them streamed back into the interior of Cambodia to get away and left enough people there to fight and hold folks off. But one of the units from the teams in our outfit was following a huge trail that was about 40 feet wide that looked like it had been a herd of elephants going down there. And it was an escaping NVA unit, and so we had to stop them and call in B-52 strikes on the people ahead of them. But it was right up until the end that our guys stayed in there.
Okay, we've got another caller on the line, Colonel. It's a Jim Day from Eugene, Oregon, calling up. And Jim, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Good morning, guys. I had to get up early to listen to this.
I greatly appreciate you doing this.
Good morning, Jim. Hey, how are you, boss? Yeah, I haven't heard when the book will be available yet, Colonel.
Well, I am expecting the galley proof any day. As soon as I get that and get it approved, why, they'll start cranking them out. I hope to have it ready for our Special Operations Association reunion on the 22nd of October in Las Vegas.
Excellent. Is it going to be available in all the major bookstores?
It will be through our publisher.
Okay.
That's good to know. Well, hopefully we're going to definitely get a link up on our website of where you can get a hold of this book, and I'm waiting for my copy so I can read this and pass it on to my children and let them know exactly what Daddy did during the war.
Well, I would like to say that I have read some of the notes from the colonel, and you're going to learn a lot that you didn't know if you purchase this book.
Well, I think that's very true, Jim. Most of us, I mean, you know, we didn't even know, you know, all of what our mission was about while we were doing them. You know, only all they told us is what we needed to know.
Well, Jim Day is one of the troops that I was honored to have with me at that time. He served not only on recon, but he worked on our launch sites, like you said, at Budop or Duck Lap or other places where we would stage from going across the border. And Jim's one of the best. I appreciate him listening in this morning.
Well, I'm going to have to go take a nap after this, but you're welcome.
Yeah, in Oregon, you had to get up early, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
Well, thank you very much for getting up early, Jim, and we appreciate you listening to Veterans Radio.
All right, thanks, Dale.
All right, thank you.
Bye.
Well, Colonel, we got a couple of minutes to go. Is there anything that you would like to add to the conversation that you want to make sure that we remember to kind of inspire us and our audience to go out and buy this book?
Well, this is not a romance novel, and I'm not a very good writer, so it's not going to win any great awards, but it is a chronological history of the unit that we pull together from snatches of information, of award citations, of photographs that our guys had, and memories that we've been able to sit down and collaborate. The reason that we did it is because one lady, one of my troops, by the name of Baby Son Davidson, got killed. I was in the Pentagon at the time, and his mother contacted me and wanted to make sure that we had a memorial for him. Mm-hmm. So I started off saying, "Okay, Katie, I'll make sure we have a memorial." But then we talked about it a little bit, and we couldn't give a memorial to just one. We had to do it for everybody. And the only way to do that was to finally write a book about the unit. And it's for the families and for the men primarily, to show what they did, put it in writing, because people tend to forget.
They do.
Even we forget.
That's true.
And we should not forget.
No, and that's one of the reasons that we do this program, to make sure that people don't forget these stories. I want to thank you so very much for being on Veterans Radio this morning, and we'll let people know where they can purchase this book when it does come out. And again, thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome, Dale. Thank you very much.
All right, we've got another one in the can, as they say. You've been listening to Veterans Radio. We were talking with Lieutenant Colonel Fred Lindsay, and his book is about the Green Beret Commandos in Cambodia. Don't miss out on that. Until next week, you are dismissed.
All views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of Veterans Radio or this station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.